Yes, hi. I am calling this number because I saw it on a bathroom wall. Seeing if you're Brandy.
I'm Brandy Lucas, and this is Brandy is Going to Hell. My taste in music is all over the shop, and it's the driving force behind this show. I will be bringing you music updates and chats with artists that you won't hear anywhere else.
The only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool.
I started playing 8-string bass in college. I'm self-taught. So I just kind of started cold emailing companies. Conklin got back to me and they're like, hey, we really like what you do. It's really different. You deal with, you know, a lot of jazz players, fusion players, but you're a fucking weirdo. So like, we're in. So it took 14 months to build. It made me appreciate the instrument a lot more. Fortunately, a couple of years ago, Bill Conklin died. He was like the first like professional in the luthier world that would like really believed in us. So it's like a great loss in the bass community, at least. It really proudly rep his stuff.
I'm Brandy Lucas, and that was Pete Raines of New York City's instrumental post-rock trio, You Bred Raptors. Pete shares how sounding different has given the band really cool opportunities and dives into the band's new album, Lysine. Pete also shares the oldest thing he owns, which happens to be 70 million years old. Greetings, Earthlings. Thanks for hitting that play button to support my podcasting dreams. I am so grateful you tuned in so I can take you on this musical journey. If you're new here, I interview artists big and small. And before every interview, I talk about five albums by artists big and small that I dig. Welcome to episode 28. I'm thrilled to have founding member and 8-string bassist Pete Raines of New York City's instrumental post-rock trio, You Bred Raptors, on the show. Pre-pandemic, you might have seen them busking underground as you waited for your subway, as Pete is a lifelong member of the Music Under New York program. Before our chat, I got to see You Bred Raptors open for guitarist Nita Strauss, who became the first female rock solo artist in 32 years to hit number one on Billboard's mainstream rock chart with her song Dead Inside, featuring David Draiman of Disturbed. She has also played guitar with Alice Cooper and Demi Lovato. I am so stoked to share that I am premiering You Bred Raptors' song Perimeter on this episode before its release. The band's new album Lysine hits all streaming services this Friday, May 12th. So you're hearing it here first. Check out You Bred Raptors on socials. Give them a follow, pre-order their new album Lysine, and perhaps support their Patreon while I dive into records that I dig. You can listen along to all the music I reference on my show via two 5-star playlists that I created just for you. Brandy is Going to Hell, New Music I Dig, and Brandy is Going to Hell, My Dope Guests. You can find these playlists on Spotify by searching Brandy Lucas Airy or on my website, brandyisgoingtohell.com. And if that's too much for you, find me on Instagram at Brandy Lucas. That's Brandy with an I, Lucas with a K, and tap the link in my bio. And it's all laid out there in black and white. First up, Bay Area math rock trio COVID, led by guitarist virtuoso Yvette Young, released their third studio album, Catharsis, this past April. The opening track, Coronal, is the only track on the album with lyrics. And if you're a fan of instrumental bands, I think you'll dig it. I personally liked the heavier track, Smolder. Philadelphia metalcore band Jesus Piece released their second studio album, So Unknown, April 14th. If you want chugging riffs, ferocious beats, and brazen call and response vocals, jump into So Unknown and prepare to have your face and ears melted. Up next, the UK's post-hardcore and progressive metal band As Everything Unfolds released their sophomore album Ultraviolet April 21st, and I love everything about it. The title track opens the album with a nu metal vibe, and Charlie Rolfe's vocals throughout the record are so dope. I just love female-fronted rock bands. Check them out. This one is a mouthful. The St. Pierre Snake Invasion, a five-piece from Bristol, released their third full-length album, Galore, at the end of April. At first listen, I was hooked. It's tortured, twisted, frenzied, and heavy. Rapper Domo Genesis and producer The Alchemist paired up for the album No Idols, and I love it. I admittedly haven't listened to Domo Genesis before, but after I listened to the list of new releases, this record really stood out to me, both the beats and the rhymes, and I'll be surely doing a deep dive. And now, get ready to vibe with Pete Raines of New York City's instrumental trio and hear their new song Perimeter for the first time on Brandy Is Going to Hell. Here we go. Thank you so much, Pete, for hanging with me today. Let's jump right into it.
All right, cool. I'm glad we got this together.
Yeah, me too. Can you please share with everybody in podcast land who makes up You Bred Raptors?
Okay. Hello, podcast land. my name is Pete. I'm with the band You Bred Raptors. We've been around, 13 years now. We just celebrated our 13-year anniversary. So it's always been a trio except for the first year. So as of right now, it's me on 8-string bass. It's Tara Hanisch on cello. And then Danny Scher is our drummer. We're like a rockin' teenage trio right now.
Hell yeah. You're teenagers now. So my intro to You Bred Raptors goes back to Nita Strauss's headline gig at Market Hotel in December 2021, along with Black Satellite, Mark Rizzo of Soulfly, and You Bred Raptors kicking off the evening. So first off, I was blown away by your performance. It was fucking rad. And I recall Nita was super excited to share that she had local bands opening up for her headline tour for Every Stop, which I thought was super rad of her. So your band's bio starts off with, if Jackie Kennedy and John Waters threw a masquerade ball, You Bred Raptors would be the band to play it. And, you know, between the three of you, you've done some pretty cool stuff. Your cello player, that's a mouthful. Tara Hanisch performed with Yo-Yo Ma, the Foo Fighters at the Grammys, Michael Bublé, Josh Groban, Barry Manilow, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Smokey Robinson, and Randy Newman, just to name a few. Your drummer, Danny, is a successful session musician who I'm familiar with through his own project, Horse Torso, who I discovered through the bass player Nick Justin Baroness. Yep. And then we have you, Pete Raines, the founder of the band Slaying on the 8-string bass. You're a lifelong member of the Music Under New York program. Can you please share a little bit about that program and how it's related to the band?
This band just kind of started as a one-off show in 2010. My friend was throwing an art show and she was like, hey, do you just want to play? And normally I was just playing all solo around that time. And I was like, sure, fuck it. And I got my drummer to learn 5 songs with me in like 5 days. And then we played this show. And then we're like, well, that worked. So it's just, I've always wanted to play in the subway system. And I knew I could just show up with it. But if I had my amp and my gear, I could get, you know, stolen or it could get confiscated by the police. So we went and got, you know, we went and auditioned for this thing. And I had no intention of, I didn't think we were going to make it. There's no way. I knew it was just going to be like a bunch of olds judging us, like literally judging you. And then I knew we were just going to be too weird. So we just kind of gave it a shot. Our audition video was like the most four on the floor kind of accessible music of people that what I thought would dig it. Like I did a 2-hand tapping version of Eleanor Rigby, and I'm not like the biggest Beatles fan, but I knew that they would probably dig it. So lo and behold, I have like 700 people that, you know, submitted videos. About 60 people got auditions. We were one of them. So, and then you have like a 5-minute audition in front of a bunch of judges and you're on live television. So again, I did not think we were going to make it in. And so we just did. We didn't wear masks that time. Like we kept them off because we didn't want to scare anybody. And so we just did like a really funky kind of like 5-minute audition, and I was like, well, that was an interesting thing. I didn't think anything would come of it. And then we got in, and it's like a lifetime commitment, and you have to schedule every 2 weeks, and there's some politics involved like anything else. So but it just meant that you could play in front of 60,000 people an hour. Even if they're not listening to you, like, you can play in front of them. You have a shot. And back then it was a little easier because, like, people still had CD players. And, you know, there wasn't, you know, reception underground in the subway system. So you were the entertainment. You know, like, people had phones, but they had Brick Breaker on, you know, on BlackBerry. You know, that was it. It's not like what it is now where it's, like, really trying to, you know, fight for people's attention. So totally. We got in and we started playing like 2-3 times a week, and then that gave us a cycle of band members that didn't want to do that. So we've gone through a few.
Oh wow, that's really interesting. That program sounds pretty cool. You know, to find new people to discover your music. So that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think the year that we auditioned, there's a bunch of, like, and God love them, but they're like a bunch of panpipe flute players, and there's a bunch of singer-songwriters, and, like, good for them. But I think because we were different, it kind of gave us an edge. Like, people wanted something different, and it's just something to break up the monotony. And they wanted Music Under New York, which has been around since like the 70s. They wanted it to be a little more hip. So probably the only time in my life I've been called hip or cool. So I'll take it. We haven't done it since the pandemic. The pandemic kind of changed everything. And like I said, it was already changing. Like, the first couple of years, we were making, like, pretty good money. Like, it's hard money to make. It's just, it's 3-4 hours in the heat or the cold. You're lugging all your gear, you know, and occasionally fighting with a crackhead for your spot. So it's not super easy, but it's, if you want to get heard in front of a lot of people and you really want to hone your sound, that's where to do it, because people will quickly tell you if you suck or not, you know. Or if, like, you think your stuff's good, like, try to play at a busy, crowded, you know, like, strap hanger crowd that's at rush hour, you know, and people will, like, barge through you and, like, you suck. And you're like, I'll try to extrapolate any kind of constructive criticism from that, but thank you,
you know? Cool. So next we need to talk about your custom 8-string bass. Please walk us through your collaboration with Conklin Guitars and your line of custom strings.
So that was interesting because I guess, like we talked about earlier, like, I'm not really a gearhead. We're both not audio snobs, obviously. But I have to pretend to be. So I was like, oh, I really like this. I started playing 8-string bass in college, and it was just totally on a whim that I got one. And I was like, fuck, like, everyone's, like, looking to me because I have to purport that I know what I'm doing, and I don't, because I'm, like, I'm self-taught, and now I have 4 extra strings. So I just kind of started emailing, like, cold emailing companies, because the 8-string bass I had was, like, this really shitty made glued on neck kind of thing, and, like, it did the job and it was working, but it wasn't ergonomically designed at all for the amount of shows we were playing. Like, it was cramping my hands and, like, and my style. So the only place that got back to me, I won't lie, there was only 2 places that got back to me, and one was like, hey, we really like your music, but we're not going to give you a bass for free, you know. And I was like, I'm not asking for free, just like a collaboration, like artist pricing and whatever. And they're like, yeah, we don't really do that. Because a lot of those places, honestly, they kind of cater to collectors, or they cater to, like, the dad that plays in a jam band or something like that. And nothing, there's no shade there. It's just, like, these guys have the income to pay, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 for a bass, and they don't really play out that much. Like, I needed a bass that was, like, durable, that could be, like, road tested, and I could have, like, a backup in case anything went wrong with it. So Conklin got back to me and they're like, hey, we really like what you do. It's really different. We deal with, you know, a lot of jazz players, a lot of, like, fusion players, but you're a fucking weirdo. So, like, we're in. So I thought, great. Like, is my bass, will it be ready in 2 weeks? And of course it wasn't, because I don't know. I'm not Al Borland. I don't know shit about woodworking or being a luthier. So it took 14 months to build, and I'm a really impatient person by nature. So It was tough. Like, every month I'd be like, hey, can I help at all? Is there anything I can do to, like, shove this process along? And they're like, no, why don't you calm down? Like, we'll get to it when we get to it. And I'm glad, because it took so long. It kind of tempered my expectations. And, you know, if you gave me free rein to make my bass, I'd be like, put, like, a, you know, like, a flamethrower on it, you know, or, like, let's put more dolphins on it. Like, I needed to really lower the bar. and I needed just like a really good durable bass. And so it is, it's got like two truss rods, you know, it's like a really hard ebony neck, and it's like bolt on. Because originally I would really like a neck through design, because it looks just looks sleek and sexy on the back. But if anything goes wrong with it, you can't just easily get that fixed, because it's one solid piece of wood that you're working with. So getting the bolt on was, it's an easy fix if like anything gets out of alignment, if it gets knocked around on tour. I don't know, it made me appreciate the instrument a lot more. Fortunately, a couple of years ago, Bill Conklin died. So I'm not really sure what's going on with my endorsement at the moment. I think they kind of halted a lot of them. It's like a family business, so I'm not sure who's taking it over. And obviously, it'd be really inconsiderate of me to be like, excuse me, like, when's it my turn? When is this going to be about me? So he was such a nice dude. So it was really, he was like the first like professional in the luthier world that would like really believed in us, believed in the band. So it's like a great loss in the bass community, at least. And I don't know, I like really proudly rep his stuff.
You have is mind-blowing. I remember when I saw you live, like that was the first thing my eyes went to, was like, what the hell is this thing? Like, it is just so cool. And
it distracts people from the weird sex faces I make on stage. So it's good, but people see that and they kind of, I don't know, it sounds dumb, but like you have this responsibility. Same with they see my pedals and that, you know, they want to know about it. And I'm like, I will do my best to answer any questions. But again, like, I just feel lucky to have it. And I like, it's now been with me since like for 10 years, like 2013 was when they released it. And the same thing kind of happened with the string endorsement, which was like, I, you know, my friend of mine, like worked at that company. So he's like, hey, like, here's the guy's number. Like, it was Kurt Mangan. And I thought I was going to talk to somebody in their marketing department, but he actually got back to me, like the Kurt Mangan. And he's like, hey, again, this is different than what we normally cater to, because like they have a lot of country stars on their roster. And I'm like, I'm not in that family at all, even close. So, but because it was different and it was a little, you know, off the beaten path, they're like, we're going to give this a shot. And so because it was like a different string gauge than they're normally used to, they're like, yeah, let's just do it. And they've been giving me stuff ever since. So like, I felt bad during the pandemic when like we weren't doing anything, and I, you know, feel this responsibility to like, you know, at least promote them as much as possible. But I think just one of them said to me, like, you guys are outlasting a lot of other bands, you know, and you're still doing something different. Like, you don't have to post something once a week. It's not about that. It's just like when you post it, it's like the quality. I really appreciate people that understand we can't always have content ready for you. I think you probably deal with the same thing. It's just like, you know, the audience is a voracious appetite and they're very short attention spans. They give you this pit in your stomach every time you wake up, like, oh, I haven't posted to Instagram today. Like, you know, this company gave me this, so like I'm now indebted for life. And really, they're just people and we're all just trying to like, you know, do the same thing. It's a big rat race. So I'm really proud of all the sponsors that I actually rep. So they're not, you know, pushing me too hard at the moment, which is good.
Cool. Do you want to shout out anybody else that sponsors you while you have the mic?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm with Kurt Mangan Strings, Conklin Guitars. I'm with Rougarou Pedals. They're out of Louisiana. Mojo Hand is out of Michigan. Cusack Music. I'd really like an endorsement from, like, I don't know, Pepsi or something. Even though I don't drink Pepsi, it just seems like they have a lot of money to throw around. I'll sell out to anybody. I have no shame. I know our music is cool. So literally, I don't care what the company is. You know, celebrities get to do really awesome advertisements in Japan. Like, let me do that. Let me do some gum company or something out there. So I'm currently in between bartending jobs right now. So my bar is set extremely low for any kind of employment.
Okay. How did you meet Tara?
She came like the way Danny came, actually. They had about 5 days notice before tour that we went on. The person that was with the band at that time just bailed. You know, we were going through a lot of like hired guns, just trying to keep the band going. And I started the band, but it has definitely become Tara and I's project. And she just like breathed a lot of life in this. And the same way Danny did when he came in. It just, you know, at rough times when you're like, is this worth it? You know, it's been X amount of years and it's not working, or some parts are working, but like we haven't hit it. you know, we keep hitting the ceiling above us. And then somebody comes in and it just kind of like reshapes what you do. We had some guy with us that was our cellist, and he just, I don't know what his deal was. He just was like, I'm done. I can't come on tour with you. And it's like 5 days before we left. So trying to find a cellist in that amount of time, like, I shit you not, it's almost impossible, because not only do you have to find a cellist that can like play with a rock band, like play loud, you got to find somebody that can like play with pedals. Again, not necessary, but like definitely helpful. They have to be able to, how do I say this delicately? Most classical people, they're not really taught how to write. They're taught how to recite and play and sight read and all that shit I wish I could do. But they're not taught how to jam, and they're not taught how to be a songwriter. And it's a shame, because like their technical skills are amazing. But we dealt with a lot of hired guns who are like, I need everything written exactly as is, you know, and I can play it for you. But anytime there was, you know, you fuck up during a song and you have to like go an extra couple measures to like kind of catch up, like they couldn't do that. They would only read the music.
Yeah, very robotic in a way. Yeah.
And so finding a cellist that was like down to like experiment and try something new, and she played an electric cello too, and she had one. Like we had the music, we transposed it for like violins and viola. We even transposed it for like a 12-string bass player just for that tour, because we were just like, we need somebody. We had contracted shows that we like had to come out and play. And yes, we could have canceled them and it wouldn't have been the end of the world, but we would have lost that contact. And it's just to like cancel a show because somebody's being like a butthead, and to cancel a whole tour when like, you know, you've already rented the van. Like, we don't have a van. Like, we have to rent every fucking time. It was just like, no, you're not going to win. Like, we can do this. And so luckily, because one of our old cellists, he had a contact. We literally went through everyone. I genuinely think I've probably talked to 80% of cellists that live in New York at one time or another. And I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to have like this relationship where like, he's going to come and get you. Like, you know, at some point, Kaiser Soze is going to come get you and talk to you about being in his band. I don't want to be that, but luckily she was like, I'm available. I can do this. You know, we're like, we'll pay you this much. And she was really like, and, you know, we pulled up and like our record label had a van at that point, which we still had to rent. And it was like the world's shittiest van. It's the one that like literally caught fire the tour after this and got broken into in Chicago. Like, I don't know how she got into this creepy ass looking van. It's like, well, I'll see you 3 weeks later to her husband. But I'm so glad she did, because like she was like the yin to my yang, if you know, as cheesy as that sounds. She's like, she's so like type A, and she is so organized, but she's just such a beautiful songwriter, which is what I always wanted the sound to be. And we had gone through so many cellists at the time. We went through like 5 or 6 in like a 2-year span.
Wow. Damn.
And it was just, none of them felt like right. And the same with drummers. When Danny came in, we had about 5 days notice. And that was like after the pandemic. So we hadn't gone on tour, you know, in about 2 years. And then Danny just happened to be available, which is crazy now, because that motherfucker's in like 7 bands, you know, like big band slut. And that's where you saw him, you know, from Nick from Baroness. But he just, I don't know, Danny was such the complete opposite of our past drummers. He was just such like a positive force. He's so like goofy and jovial, and like you want to show sucks, he's just, I don't know, the positive energy is just, I can't even put into words how important it is. I'd rather that than anything else. It just, it's icing on the cake that he's probably the best drummer we've ever played with too. Aww. Just really interesting, and he's clever with his beats, and you know, he doesn't like just play double kick all the time. It's just like, I want to come up with a different beat, because he comes from a jazz background. So I'm just super happy to have this core group.
Yeah, right, sounds rad. Mm-hmm. So that brings us here. Your 5th studio album's coming out on Friday, May 12th, called Lysine, featuring 11 brand new songs. And mm-hmm. I'm super excited to share that I'm premiering track 3, mm-hmm. Perimeter, in just a moment.
Yeah.
So what I love about your band is that the music on each album kind of takes you on a journey, and I can't help but feel like that it's a soundtrack to a film that's playing out as I listen. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel every emotion, the storytelling just through your instruments. It's very, very vivid and cool, especially when you're just like doing chores and you have your band on in the background. You're like, whoa, I just went on this journey and I don't even have anything in front of me to kind of, you know, take me through it, but the instruments do that, you know, for it.
That's our demographic, is house husbands during chore play.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, sorry if I didn't sell it there, but like, you know, that's when, you know, when you approached me to do this interview, you know, I really wanted to dive deep into your whole catalog. And in the past couple of weeks, the spare time I had was when I was just doing shit around the house to really listen to it. But yeah, it's great. So can you please talk about the writing process of Lacey and how this album compares to past ones? And, you know, you said Danny is, you know, joining the band, resuscitated this project. Yes. With his PMA. So please talk a little bit about that, lysine, and, you know, give me
Yeah, you're right. We get around, like, it's weird because, like, we were revamping our site and, like, just putting up all our old albums. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that album and that album and that. Like, we have just been through so much. And I felt guilty because the last album we put out was, like, 5 years ago. And so I was like, oh, like, people are going to think we're lazy and shit. And I'm like, fuck those people. Like, we've put out so much and, like, for free. Like, nobody's buying full albums anymore. So it's funny when you're like, track three. I'm like, oh, that's right. Like, hopefully somebody will be seeing that this has track three somewhere. Like, hopefully there will be some CD player or some record or whatever. So I don't know. We were with everybody else in 2020 and the world fucking stopped. And we're like, what do we do? And then we started seeing bands like God love them, but like, just, I don't know, definitely jealousy that the bands that were just killing it online, that like they were like, oh, don't worry, like make do with our parents' money and we're gonna like create awesome house shows and like just killing it, like just doing great Zoom stuff. And we're like, well, that's not really us. We're definitely a live band. Like, we like our bread and butter was really like doing touring and people seeing us live and just like vibing off that energy. So we just wrote. And because that's all we could do. And we wrote like two albums worth of material, condensed it down to one album. And then we lost a drummer. So, but every time you lose a member, like, especially like with something like a trio, like if we were a ska band and we had 12 members, we could probably kick off a French horn player and it'd be fine, but, or don't, like we have three people. That's like, that's a limb. So every time you lose somebody, you kind of lose the sound, you lose songs. And it's just like, it makes you just delve deep in like, which songs does this person genuinely need to learn before we go on tour? Or before we play this big show or whatever. And then the other ones just kind of get lost in the ether. So once we lost that drummer and Danny jumped in, we did a tour and we're like, you know what? Let's just cut half those songs. Because we can do better. And because Danny just brought this like groove back to the band that had just been lacking for many years. And not for like, it didn't sound bad before. It was just different. You know, we had our second drummer. He was definitely like a metal drummer, you know, so like technical ability was great. Speed was great. But like, you know, I remember we got commissioned to write this, you know, like a theme song for this Gilbert Gottfried TV show. And they kind of wanted like this hip hop influence. And we're just, the two of us were like, man, we suck at this. You know, we're like trying to listen to Public Enemy and Rage Against the Machine, like a ton, just to kind of get in that mind frame. And like, we just couldn't do it. But like now with Danny, like he can just jump into stuff. And that's what you need, is there's somebody to like anchor you in so many different directions. So because he was in the band, it just didn't feel right to like, just, hey, learn, you know, 10 to 15 songs and we're going to record them. We just decided to kind of tour a little bit on them, make the songs our own, and just completely write a whole bunch of stuff. And writing the three of us half that album was just kind of euphoric. It was just like eye-opening and like, oh, this is how good it can sound. And then all these songs kind of morphed. And then we're like, then we recorded them.
Cool.
So it definitely feels like the first time that three people have kind of like written songs together and then recorded in this band. Usually it's been like piecemealed and, you know, I would write the skeleton and then Tara would write something on top of it and then we'd have drums. So this is a big experiment for us. And that's why this one is a little more stripped down. But the soundtrack thing is really, you know, like warms my cold, dead heart, because like that's what we want. We want this like soundtrack to your life kind of thing. As horny as that sounds, it's important that, you know, because it's instrumental, it should have a narrative still, because we're not whining about getting dumped by our girlfriend and going to the mall. Like, these songs can mean anything to anybody, depending on like what they're going through. And it's been very hard to find representation and a booking agency. And, you know, when we're doing label pitches right now, which is just like, Hari Kari for me. It's just rejection after rejection, because they're like, I don't fuck with instrumental bands. You know, it's not an easy sell. So, but we really want to get more into, because we've scored some film before and we really like it. We really want to like stick with that. And I see other bands that are like kind of killing it, and they're so it's possible to do. Like, you can still be instrumental and you can still get out there. It's the avenues are way harder. I'm just not sleeping with the right people. I think that's the problem. And I will show me a casting couch and I'll do it. So, I mean, Lysine kind of came out of that. It was just like, fuck it, we're going to do what we want. And like, it was really close to me ending the project before Danny joined. It was like, I don't know what the music landscape is going to look like when COVID, you know, stops or we all get better, which didn't happen. Like, we're still in the throes of it, but we're just kind of choosing to live with it. So, and it's the landscape's kind of been decimated, and a lot of venues closed. A lot of our contacts got out of the business. So we're like starting over in like a lot of ways. And it was tough for us to like lose our masks, because that was like our identity for so long. And now we're just like a band in the crowd. Like, we're just a dime a dozen, it feels like. So I'm hoping that the music is what still sets us apart.
Yeah, it definitely is. So don't be too hard on yourself. And
I can't. My mom's been saying that to me for my entire life. So I'm not gonna listen to you.
Okay. No, but you know, you guys are great. So that's coming from me, and I'm just, you know, I'm not that important, but I really like to think I have
super
superior.
Important. That's why that's
I have
why
superior I, taste.
I saw you at the Nita Strauss show, which, like, I don't know, what did you think of that show? I'm curious. From somebody in the crowd, I really appreciate you showing up early, but who did you go to see?
Nita Strauss, you know, I went for her because she released a song with David Draiman, and David Draiman's at Q Prime, which is the company I work for. So I went for that sole purpose, and I'm the person that goes to shows early. Like, that's who I am. I love openers. Like, when I was 14, the bands that I went and saw were the openers of bigger bands on tour, you know? So, sure. Like, I love openers and learning new music, discovering, right? And I remember, I think I walked in maybe when you were playing or started playing, and I did, like, a double take. And I was like, whoa, this is fucking cool. So, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, the people who are meant to be there will be there for it.
We're throwing so much spaghetti at the wall. Like, that was kind of this last tour too. Like, on paper, it looked like, oh, this, you're doing really well because you're opening up for bigger bands, which is true. But it's like you're trading one set of problems for another, because in that case, you're going on away early and like you're hoping people show up on time, and you're not getting as much money because you're not headlining. So you're really trying to push merch, but merch you have to re-up. So it's this thing where, like, yes, you want to like play to bigger crowds and it looks better on a resume that you played with these people, but on the other hand, it's like, oh, you have no, you like, you have to, you can only play a half hour and you have to get off the stage by this time, and you know you can't take up too much of stage. Like, you're literally standing in like a footprint. So we're trying to navigate a lot of that stuff. We have a booking agency now, but it's still us doing most of the work. We don't really want to champion the DIY thing so much, but it's like if we don't do the DIY thing, it's just not going to get done.
You know, yeah, it's funny you say that, and it's not funny, but it's just like, you know what? You have to be the one to give yourself opportunities, because nobody else is going to do it for you. And I'm a big champion of that. Like, this is why this podcast exists. That's why, you know, I ever was able to get into music at all, like on the back end of things, is I created my own opportunities and one thing led to another, and you just got to keep doing it and it'll pay off in the long run.
I hope so.
Yeah. So with this album's release, you have a lot of exciting news surrounding it. You have the launch of a new web store to pre-order Lysine, so everybody listening better go do that. You can get it on vinyl, which is due out in September, or you can get the CD due in 2 days. And in addition to the web store, there's some really cool merch on there too that you've got going on. I picked up a t-shirt, or actually I picked up a Razorback.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
I haven't even got the new merch yet, because we're using a new company, which is good, because every time somebody ordered, it would go through a bunch of different people, but eventually go to me, and I'm like scared of going to the post office, and I'm like, it just became. So now you order it and you literally get it within 5 days, which is great. And I hear it's really good quality. I haven't tried the the women's Razorback shirt on yet. But
I'm sure it would be super cute on you.
Who wore it better? I don't know. We're going to find out.
So in addition to your merch store that's brand spanking new and pre-ordering Lysine, you also have relaunched a new and improved Patreon and no more masks, as you said before. So like You Bred Raptors is coming in strong and ready to conquer. So for those curious about the masks, you can head to the blog section of youbredraptors.com for the full and in-depth story. I read it all, you know, before prepping for this interview. I learned so much about your band in that one blog post, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I kind of vomit out a lot when I'm trying to explain stuff. So.
Hey, it's authentic and real, and I love that about you. So, Pete, can you please share what folks can expect if they become a patron of You Bred Raptors through Patreon?
Hey, you got it out. That's great. Years ago, we did Patreon, and I don't think it was – it might have been for an album or something, but – Like I said in the blog post, the landscape was just so different. You could put something out once a month and be fine, but now you it's almost daily. It's definitely weekly. It's just that's what people are feeding on. That's what you kind of give. And I sometimes think we were born in the wrong decade. We could have just been fine, released one vinyl, one decade, like per decade, and been fine. People would have liked this, and we would have had mystique. Now we don't have that. Well, it's fine because it actually keeps you engaged and it makes you do stuff and it, you know, so stuff doesn't fall by the wayside. So we're trying to offer realistic stuff on Patreon, you know, like there's low tiers at like $5 a month. That's just like, you're just following us. You're just cool. We're friends. You get a chest bump every time we see you kind of thing. And we really appreciate the support. And it goes all the way up to like, you can get lessons and you can get like, you know, custom merch and then we can do a Zoom concert for you. And, you know, we'll break up with your significant other if you're having a difficult time, you know. So we're trying to think outside the box here. It's important that we kind of realize that people just don't like our music. Like they like us as people. And it's hard for me to kind of open up to people. I know I seem jovial and whatever, but it's not really my comfort zone. It's hard for me to open up to people because like this project means so much to me. And like, I'm kind of the opposite of my drummer that way, where like he's in so many projects because he loves all music and stuff. Whereas like I put all my eggs in this one basket. And if this doesn't work out, it feels like it's a reflection on me and my abilities, which is not the case. So like having people say like, no, we care about you and your journey doing this, like means a lot. It still takes me, I still get taken aback by it that, you know, we've been a part of people's lives. Like we've been a part of people's weddings, even when we haven't played them. You know, like our band is where people have met and then gotten married. Like that's huge. I can't put that into words and I sometimes can't process it. I'm like, well, it's fine. And I just kind of shove it aside because I don't want to feel feelings sometimes. It's just the fact that people want to be on the journey with us. This is a good way to do it, you know, and it's not just us needing a handout or fundraising every month. It's like I follow people on Patreon and if I really believe in what they do and I really care and, you know, even if it's like I'm not going to get anything out of it, it's just like they're providing me with something. This is a way that I can kind of give back to them. I'm hoping that people do that for us because we put all of our effort into this. Like it's literally the last thing I think of every night when I sleep and when I wake up. It's the knots in my stomach are about this. So y'all need to help out because this is obviously making me insane.
Yes, so. Everybody listening right now, go support You Bred Raptors on Patreon. Get those lessons. Break up with your future ex.
Yeah.
And no, yeah, support this process. It's really cool. Very, very talented group of musicians. And together, you just make this great music. So thank you for that.
Yay.
And in that same blog post where you lay it all out, can you also allude to some of the, you say there are some summer tour dates coming?
Yes. So, yes, we're getting them booked right now. But we have a couple festivals that are happening. We're doing Chaffee's Fest and it's around Erie, Pennsylvania. We got some cool dates around that. We're doing like a week around there. And then we're doing like a 3-week tour in August. I don't mean to be cryptic. So it's just not announced and some places don't want it to announce. I know we're playing a goddamn zoo.
Ooh.
In upstate New York for this beer festival. And I don't drink. You know, I've never drank in my life. I'm probably a terrible bartender, but I want to play a zoo. Like we're going to literally play next to like a monkey cage, which is you know, that's got to be one of my bucket list items, at least as an 8-year-old, you know, that had subscribed to the National Geographic like flip book thing that I could not get out of, that I was getting till I was like 25 years old. But I don't know. I like weird shows like that, that we can kind of be our freaky selves, and, you know, you get to play for a bunch of other like adult kids like us. So we got a really good show, which I think it might be our CD release show. We're playing with Daikaiju on June 4th at the Meadows in Brooklyn. There's just a crazy surf rock band. I think we initially got hooked up with them because we both wore masks, but we kind of saw what they did and we're like, fuck, we're not gonna be able to compete with these guys. They literally light their instruments on fire while they're playing them. So it's like, well, we seem very tame in comparison, so you guys can have it, you win. So that's June 4th, and we got some other cool shit coming up, but it's all on the brand new website, which, you know, it would have been fine just having our MySpace account, but I've been locked out of it since 2011. I just literally can't get in. I don't remember the password, so
I'm on the same boat.
It's not gonna be the most up-to-date information, but you can be our top 8 friend if you really try.
Woohoo! And is there anything else that you'd like to share or preview before we roll into some rapid fire questions?
No, I really appreciate this. I used to be a podcast host, so I really kind of miss the dialogue. So I'm really glad people like you exist that not only show up to shows early, but like talk about music in the way that, like, not just this is what's going on, but like, this is how it affected me, and this is what I was going through when I first heard it. So this is why it's imprinted on me. And I miss that with like music journalism, whereas it's not just, it's the same with like tour diaries that, you know, I've written a couple of them for bass magazines, and I don't want to read like, hey, we went to Santa Barbara and then we went to San Francisco and both those shows were okay. Like, I want to hear why it sucked or why it was good. And like, you know, it sucks because like, you can't really get in the nitty gritty and you can't talk shit and you have to be professional, but you can still talk about how it connects all of us, you know, as vague as that sounds. But I really appreciate putting like the emotion back into the music listening, because that's really why we do this.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's really nice to hear. That's why I do it, so I appreciate that. And I guess through your Patreon, people can hear about that journey. Yeah, this August.
Right. Yeah, you gotta pay to be our friend.
Cool. So let's hit some silly rapid fire questions.
Okay.
If you built a themed hotel, what would the theme be, and what would the rooms look like?
If I did,
Unless you're hiding something from us.
Yeah, I'm actually an entrepreneurial spirit over here. Themed hotel. Waterbeds. I want waterbeds back.
Wow.
I think I missed them by like a sliver of time. I'm a big water baby. Like, I always spend way too long in the pool. Like, I don't get out until my hands are wrinkled. But I'm like, I've never had sex on a waterbed. So it's like, that's one of my stupid bucket list things. Because I know it would be terrible. That's the thing. Like, there's no thrusting kind of thing. But I love the fact that they were like, they took over the America, at least. And like, you had to get like special plumbing permits from the city to like have a waterbed in your house. And they were like,
wow,
exploding everywhere. So I would have a hotel exclusively with waterbeds, and it would be a complete disaster. And I would go bankrupt within 6 months. So that's my dream, working in hospitality.
Cool. What's the worst hairstyle you've ever had?
Like, all of it. I looked so unfuckable in high school. Like, I just want to paint you a picture. I had the Skrillex hair before it was Skrillex, but it was all the way around. And I had long braids, and I had pork chop sideburns, and then I had a braided goatee.
Wow.
So
all at the same time?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, it was like punk, grunge, and nu metal just had an orgy, and I was this like deformed result. I don't know how I had a girlfriend throughout high school. I just looked so weird, and I'd paint my nails, but my dad was a pastor and he was very much against that, so I'd paint them in the day and then take them off as soon as I got home, because that's how like hard and cool I was. And I had a mullet as a child too, so I'm counting that, I think, because I wanted to look like MacGyver. Like, that was, I was like, that's my style forever. And now mullets are like coming back. So I just should have just kept going.
Should have stuck with it.
Eventually would have been cool again. But the style that I had in high school, it will never be cool. Ever.
What's the oldest thing you own?
Oh, that's actually an easy answer. I won't say who because I think it's illegal, but I have a friend of mine who's an illustrator, like a dinosaur illustrator. She's in the UK. So she's like one of the top dinosaur illustrators. Wow. She works for a
museum
like so over
there.
That's
so random. Okay.
Yeah. She goes on dig sites and she like draws what the dinosaurs would look like because every year or two, they're like finding new specimens and like, actually, it looks like this. That's the whole thing where they found out dinosaurs had feathers and stuff. And wow. It was because of a lot of these illustrators were finding like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. This is what they would actually look like from a physiological point of view. Anyway, long story short, too late. She stole a piece of Triceratops for me because we were playing our biggest show. It was like 4,000 or 5,000 people at this convention. And she's like, I know you're nervous, you know. This was as you read Raptors, and it was at a video game convention, so I knew people wouldn't give a shit about original music, but, like, you know, we were still going to give it a shot. And she's like, this was, like, her good luck thing. She's like, I smuggled this out. I put it in my diabetes, like, canister kind of thing, and it was a piece of a Triceratops skull. So that's literally about 70 million years
old.
Wow.
That is pretty cool.
And she was like, I would have gotten, like, if customs found that, because, like, it's not just, like, you're bringing in a bunch of bananas. Like, that's, like,
no,
fossil
yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
Because, like, so. I go to the UK a lot because my husband lives there. And I've always wanted to go to this taxidermy place, but I would never be able to bring any of that stuff home, probably. So that's a really cool story. Thanks for sharing that.
Totally smuggled. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Pete. Is there anything else that you'd like to add in the world of U-bred raptors?
No, I think we covered it. Cool. A lot of this lately has been just super admin, behind-the-scenes stuff, but, like, it's reinvigorating me, whereas, you know, you go through these lulls as, like, a content producer or, like, just an artist in general where it's just you just feel guilty all the time that you're not doing enough. And sometimes it's good to, like, look back and at the scope of what you've done and, like, the fact that it has affected people. So all of that we're doing behind the scenes is actually hoping that it's just, like, it's sidelined basically because, like, new great things are going to happen. So if it seems like we haven't been around, we have. It's just I'm hoping that people can see the amount of work we've done and appreciate it. So I do appreciate the people that are here and have been with us since the beginning because it's been a wild ride. Lots of people have come and gone, you know.
Yes, totally. Well, thank you so much, Pete. And now, please enjoy the premiere of Perimeter before it's out this Friday, May 12th, through the band's fifth studio album, Lysine. Woo!
Thank you.
chapters. Be sure to check them out live, especially if you're in the New York City area on June 4th. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. In my brain, I have this ultimate dream of growing a community of people who love exploring rock music and all music in an unconventional way. If you listen because you're a friend of You Bred Raptors, hopefully you'll stick around and check out past episodes of Brandy is Going to Hell and discover somebody else. I love celebrating awesome artists, their stories, and providing fun interviews with them for you. Until then, a random thought, powered by the Wingman's Path to Positivity. A belief is just a thought that I keep thinking. What are your beliefs? What are your beliefs about you? About the world? Perhaps plant better thoughts in your noggin. Bye-bye. Thank you, yes you, for listening to Brandy is Going to Hell. I have a lot more thank yous in order for making this show come alive. I want to thank Celeste Giuliano for her amazing pinup photography. I dreamed of having my photographs taken by her in order to make my podcasting dreams come to life. So thank you, Celeste, and your team for making me look like a hot mama. Thanks to Olivia Borcheski for the latest and greatest installment of my podcast logo. I outsourced it to Olivia to turn a couple-year-old photograph into something fresh and fierce. Nailed it. Shout out and many thanks to Ryan Hanratty at Frosted Green Productions for all video production. My man, definitely don't want to be fucking with video, and you've saved my life. My amazing husband, Mike Airy, for always believing in me and bridging the gap between me and amazing artists. More importantly, having somebody that just loves me and my absolute goddamn weirdness. You are a saint, and I love you, and you're my rock. Saint Neat's hardcore band Impact for the music throughout the show. You can check out their EP Strength Through Loyalty on every streaming service. My friend Gooch, aka Ryan Nelson, for always asking me when's a new show coming out. My friend Matt Young, who got my foot into the door as an intern at IndieGoot, which led me to my first career in music at Q Prime. Huge thank you to Nick Teeter for the rec and following up. And a major shout out goes to Doug Oswandle as well for giving me a chance and hiring me there. My dad, John Lucas, for raising me with an impeccable taste in music. And my mom, Beth Ann Lucas, for helping me be a functional adult with good credit. Jokes aside, I'm so lucky to have had such wonderful and caring parents growing up and mold me into the person I am today. Last but not least, Brandy is Going to Hell is dedicated to my badass grandmom, Elizabeth Betty Fowler.